to have you here. So just before we even get into this next segment, let me paint the picture. It was about 9 o'clock this morning. We're just getting into open lines. And I felt what I thought was a fly buzzing around my head. I give it a bit of a wipe, and it was a wasp. Yes, a wasp in studio. I don't think I've ever seen that before. So I'm vigilant now watching this thing as it's flying around the lights in the studio. And then we go into the break. I said to a couple of people, Frank included, okay, we got a wasp in here. Let's see if we can find it. We hunted high and low. We could not find it. At 9:51 or whatever time it was, a wasp comes flying back, almost lands on my head. I give it a swipe. Frank sees this through the glass. And with total disregard for his own safety, Frank comes into studio and kills the wasp. I wish, apparently our video is not working in studio. Otherwise, I would have loved to have seen the video of that whole thing play out. Anyway, yeah. Thank you for those that texted in concern for the wasp situation. All right. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I said this off the start of the show. How much over the last year have we talked about education? And with good reason, because we know that the teachers in the province were trying to hammer out a new collective agreement. And while that labor fight went on, we learned a lot. We learned a lot about funding models for education. We learned a lot about classroom complexity. We learned about the different challenges that happen and play out daily in our schools. And I said this before, but through that time, I would talk to different teachers that I know because I want to get their perspective. How is this happening? Now, they couldn't just join me on the show as guests. Of course, when there's a labor dispute going on, it's the union has their spokesperson, the province had their spokesperson, and nobody else was going to join the conversation. Well, they settle, the labor dispute is over, and they're back to work. But now we've got this understanding of these problems. School is back underway now. And my friend Ron Bieberdorf, who is a longtime teacher, over 32 years, 20 of those as a principal in various locations in the province, ended his career in Martinsville at Venture Heights Elementary School, retired in June. And I said, well, then we need to get you to come on the show. I would love to talk to someone freshly out of the school system, the education system, to help us understand and pull apart some of these things. Ron Bieberdorf joins me by phone today. How's retirement, Ron?
Well, it's going fairly well. I'm doing the regular retirement thing with the yard work and renovations. And then, of course, selling things on Facebook Marketplace. So all those fun highlights.
You're going to be mall walking before long.
Yes, I'm delighted to be working with the University of Saskatchewan right now. Fourth year university students go into schools and they do their 16 week practice teaching, and all the things they learn from university, they put it into actual practice side by side with a classroom teacher. And so I'm functioning as one of their facilitators. So I'd be their direct contact and the contact with the schools and so on. So it's a wonderful program. I clearly remember my internship. It was down in Gull Lake, Saskatchewan a million years ago. So it was very meaningful for me. So I was glad to be picked up by the U of S to do that.
I love it. That's a great fit for you and a way to give back. So I wasn't wrong. 32 years as a teacher, 21 as a principal, which is a long career in an administrative role. Can you just quickly, where in the province did you work in your career?
Well, having grown up in the Shawnee School Division, I ended up getting hired back in that school division on my graduation. So I went down to Valmarie for a couple of years. Then I got a chance to go international teach. I went to Curacao in the Caribbean. People might know Curacao, might call it Caraco. Curacao is that blue liquor bottle. It's right beside Aruba and Bonaire. So I went there for a year and then off to Flin Flon, Manitoba for 4 years, where I first got into administration. I was a vice principal and a principal there, and then back to the Shawnee School Division, where I was principal at Pontiac School for 6 years. And that was sort of the life us rural folks dream about, where you're in a K-12 school and you're part of the community, and you get to play senior hockey and golf in a nice sand green golf course. So that was a lot of fun there too. Then off to the Northwest School Division, where I was in central office for 4 years, and then we moved back to Saskatoon. My wife's a principal here in the city, so I managed to do my last 15 years here in that Martinsville area.
Nice. Well, I can't imagine over 32 years the differences you saw. Can you talk about, maybe it's hard to capture, but what would you say the major changes you saw over your career of teaching?
Oh, goodness, so many changes. and not even chronologically, but I would say that what we saw change in schools with the onset of cell phones was pretty significant. And, you know, we noticed that with the cell phones, there was no regulation. They just sort of started to appear, and there wasn't a lot of policy practice around those. And so we were seeing kids, you know, reduced attention spans and all kinds of distractions. And, you know, a teacher's teaching in the classroom and a kid's on the cell phone, that doesn't seem totally respectful. Different levels of social interaction were missing. And, you know, kids on their cell phones are so susceptible to all those cell phone dangers, whether it's, you know, as simple, you know, bullying or what have you, but there's all kinds of problems out there. So we worked on that at my school and trying to get rid of that, and it was quite successful. But we had a tremendous amount of community support when we did that. So we managed to eradicate cell phones in the building, but that was a real community effort to do that.
Let's maybe just stop and talk about that for a second, because you did that before it was even talked about as a provincial movement. Was it 2018, Ron, when you did that?
Around that time.
Yeah. So what would you classify the support versus the pushback? How would you measure that? Was it overwhelming support, or was there a fair bit of pushback to the notion?
I think I got one email from a former student saying that we aren't doing a very good job on that. But other than that, it was you know, a lot of what we did was sort of parent based anyway. So I had a crew of parents come into my school one day, and they were very concerned that a young fellow had been showing some pretty wrongful things on his cell phone to the classmates. And so they said, what can we do here? Can we eradicate phones? So we talked about it, and we managed to get the phones taken out of the kids' hands from K to 4 right away. And that was easy to do. And then our grade 5 and 6 teachers, they said, well, wait a second, we'll do the same thing. We'll do it. And so with almost one strike of a pen, we got our K to 6s off phones. And then the next year, we moved school-wide. And so we had a crew of grade 8s that year that were, they just had such good leadership qualities, and they just got on board with us, and it really didn't seem to be a problem. We had struggles with, okay, what do we do when the kid has the phone out, and we develop some practices around that, or are we letting the kids have their phones at recess? Well, no, we're not. What about on the bus trips to a volleyball game? Nope, we're not going to do that either. And the neatest thing about that was one of my volleyball coaches got back from a road trip, and she said, on the bus, the kids sang Flintstone songs all the way back from the bus. Like they were interacting and having fun instead of having their eyes on their phones.
Yeah, there's all kinds of benefits, and I think good on you for being a pioneer in our province on that topic. Can we talk? We're chatting today with Ron Bieberdorf, former principal of Martinsville Venture Heights Elementary School, but 32 years of teaching, 21 as a principal. Let's talk about bullying, because when you brought up cell phones as one of the major changes in your teaching career, bullying is part of how cell phones are making a difference. Can you talk about the level of bullying that you've seen through your career and maybe how it's changed?
Yes, and certainly bullying might be a four-hour show. So I don't want to dismiss how significant that can be with just a couple of comments. There absolutely is bullying in schools. Having said that, there's bullying everywhere in society. And anywhere that human beings exist, there's going to be power indifferences. And some folks have a hard time with their power imbalance. So there'd be bullying at the workplace. There might be bullying at family gatherings. If you could imagine maybe an 18, 19-year-old person off to the workforce, and maybe they're on a framing crew, or maybe they're on the rigs, and if someone with a power imbalance is giving it to them constantly, that could be very, very tough. Now you take that and put it into a school kid's truly bullied, that takes over that child's mind and their psyche, and it takes over the whole family. So it's definitely a big deal. I read recently that 70% of kids age 12 to 17 have been bullied.
Yeah.
And right. part of what we struggle with at schools is, and we'll talk about how much resources we have in schools. There's a lot of naming of bullying that's not actually bullying. And so there's a lot of that to parent through. Sometimes it's conflict between kids. Sometimes it's a misconception of what this child is doing. Sometimes it's all over the map. And so part of the problems of schools is we've got to go out and deal with all of those. And sometimes they're not bullying at all. In the meantime, we're not able to spend the proper amount of energy that we would need for an actual bullying situation, which truly do happen. So it's definitely spread thin. And I think part of the problem is conflicts between students is often named as bullying. And so that identification of what it is also tricky.
Right. And clearly schools have a role to play, whether it's education, trying to prevent it, get in front of it, but also stepping in if you know it's happening.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, oftentimes if a child's being bullied, they don't say things right away. They live it. They put up with it. They tell their parents. And then by the time the family comes to the school with their concern, they're so frustrated because it probably in their mind, they probably think the school does know about it because it's so evident in their family
sure.
that it's happening. How would you not know that? And so one of our first things is, I'm sorry it took you this long to let us know about this. And yeah, let's get to work with it. And there are lots of ways of alleviating or fixing or educating around that bullying. But again, I'm not necessarily the published expert on it, but what I found worked with me for my case was sitting down with that actual kid who's being accused and really working with that kid and having them understand what's going on, then also saying, you know, lots of adult eyes are on this problem now. And so we're going to know if this kind of thing continues.
Mm-hmm.
If this kind of thing continues, then we escalate to the different levels. And then the other challenge, I always said, if I deal with a parent and one kiddo, then when I'm dealing with the other kiddo, even Steven, I deal with that set of parents too. So that's like my ethic. And so we will absolutely deal the other set of parents in as far as here's what's happening at the school. I don't know if you're seeing that at home, if your child's talking about it, but here's what we're seeing. And if and when we get those parents on board, pretty much things get settled.
Okay.
It's incredible when both sets of parents agree to the same thing, then things can get better a lot quickly.
As I knew would happen, Ron, with this conversation is I still have more questions on this, and I don't even feel like we're half done. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I've got a couple questions about the situations where you don't have supportive parents at home and how you deal with that, and is that a problem? I want to talk curriculum. I might have to keep you a little past 10:30, but I'll try and negotiate on the break with you on that one. Ron Bieberdorf is my guest, a teacher, retired here in June, spent 21 years as a principal, and joining us today to pull back the curtain a bit and help us understand some of the things happening in our schools. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Back to the show, Evan Bray with Ron Bieberdorf joining me. Ron recently retired from a long, well over three-decade career of teaching, 21 of those years as a principal, retiring from Martinsville Venture Heights Elementary School. So we were talking about getting parents involved, whether it's cases of bullying or any sort of a behavioral issue with children in the school. What I wanted to get into and ask you is, what about the cases, and I'm sure you came across this, Ron, where the parents are not interested in being involved, are not supportive of the school, or maybe are absent parents and not playing the role they should be in their children's lives? Did you ever come across that? How do you deal with that?
Well, certainly not at Venture Heights. We had the best parents in the world over there. But, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a classroom teacher, educational associate, principal. We base what we do on relationships. And so we build relationships with kids. We build relationships with parents. And so, and in rural context, and I consider Martinsville to be rural, you get an opportunity as principal to stay there for quite a while in your building in that capacity. And so you get to know parents, they get to know you. And if you've got enough assets in the bank, enough reputation with parents, and you phone them and say, hey, Evan, Ron here. Hey, how's it going? Good, good. You know, having a little trouble with Junior here. He's some kiddos think they're getting bullied by him. Like, we chat about that. And so most of the time, because of the relationships we've built with parents and that are being built with parents, the parents are willing to listen and willing to be ready to help you out. There will be some times in context where parents will push back and they'll say, well, no, he was just kidding. That's how he acts with his brothers, and that's how he would probably act in school. Or, you know, no, actually, that kid's bullying my kid. They do a flip around or what have you. So there's lots, and you can always go to the school division administrative procedures and say, look, we actually have policy practice around bullying and harassment. We can go through that, and we will go through that. And it might be that the parents not going to enjoy it, not going to agree with it, but the school division does have that authority to work through their admin procedures and to fix it that way. But I would say in my experience, that relationship with kids, relationship with parents, and also the follow through. So if the parent is saying, look, he's not bullying, he's not doing that, I say, well, great. If he wasn't doing it, it wouldn't continue to happen. If he was doing it, it's going to cease because that's the way it's going to go. And we always tell the kids, we're going to follow up. And so I'm putting on my calendar here, this date, I'm going to come find you in the school. We're going to see how things are going. I'm going to talk to the other kiddo, see how things are going, the follow up. And that more often than not in my context seemed to work. But yeah, definitely there's going to be parents that, you know, if the principal phones you or reaches out to you, maybe out of the blue and suggests your kid is bullying, that takes a little while to get your mind around that also.
Mm-hmm. We're chatting. Go ahead,
relationships,
Ron.
Relationships are certainly the key in this business as far as navigating a lot of the issues that happen.
Ron Bieberdorf is my guest, the former principal of Martinsville Elementary School. Okay, we are going to have to take another break, which I knew would happen, but you and I have had lots of talks about the new math system and curriculum, and is it working the way it should be? I'd love to hear your thoughts as a former teacher, now just recently retired, on that. Because when we talked about things through the teacher strike, curriculum was one that many people brought up and had concerns with. So I look forward to hearing your thoughts on curriculum, classroom complexity, and funding models for education when we come back with our guest here on 980 CJME and 650 CKO.
Now when I cruise around the other parts of the town, I got my heat gallon back. So be true to your school.
Welcome back to the show. Evan Bray on this Wednesday morning. We're having a great conversation with Ron Bieberdorf, who is recently as the end of June, retired from teaching. 32 plus years in teaching, 21 of those as a principal, ended his career in Martinsville, but worked in many places in rural Saskatchewan, even in Manitoba. Lots of different experience bringing forward and giving us a chance to dig into some of the things that we have heard about and talked about when it comes to challenges in our classrooms, in our schools, and with education in general. So I'm curious, Ron, when we were in the middle of the teacher strike, we were pulling apart, we pulled apart everything education. I think we talked about it from every angle. And one thing that we heard it from parents. We even heard it from teachers, although they wouldn't, they wanted to remain anonymous. But there were concerns about some different parts of the curriculum, and math seemed to come to the forefront all the time. Can you give us thoughts on the new math system?
You know, the scenario where the kid's doing homework at the kitchen table and the dad is sitting there showing him, and the kid says, well, that's not the way my teacher taught me how to do it. And the dad says, well, that's the way I was taught how to do it. I don't know how to teach you otherwise. That conversation where that dad has a way of doing this particular mathematical function and the kiddo is learning a different way, for them to understand each other's way, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
They would actually know more deeply because okay, you did it that way. I get that. And if I do it this way, it's the same answer, but it breaks it down in different ways, and the kid has a better understanding of what's going on. That would, to me, be one of the hopes of what you would call new math, is that it's not just about calculations. It's about understanding what that calculation means. You and I had a conversation a while ago about what the meaning of pi actually is.
Right.
You know, right now, kids, if they're doing an area of a circle, they just plunk it in. Okay, this, that, here's the radius, here's r squared, do-do-do, times pi, go. And they don't necessarily see how that circle is actually a component of four different squares. And it's just that idea of, I can do the calculation, I get it, but I don't really know necessarily it beyond that. So it's like calculation without understanding. Here's the problem. The problem is the Saskatchewan Ministry has identified about 200 minutes per week for math, and that hasn't changed. So if you look at the ministry allocation of time, like ELA literacy, that should be in that 500 or 600 minutes per week. Science, the social health, they're about 150 per week. Math, 200 per week. And so what we would need to do to truly have this work effectively is we need to dramatically increase the amount of math time in the school. And so what happens is the kiddo is shown three different ways of doing something. They're not really understanding any of the three ways, and they end up confused.
Right.
So there's just not enough time to do an effective job of that. The other thing that I would say that is an issue, and it's getting better and better, is somehow folks wanted to have a constructing model. Like, they wanted children to construct their math knowledge from problems, from viewing and being around math. And what happened was we lost that fundamental. So we lost that the memorizing your timetables or having your addition facts right at your cue. And we lost that. And so even when a kiddo's in grade 7, 8, 9, that's when I see math coming together in multiple steps. They might be on a step of solving a problem, but then they're also, now they have to divide 48 divided by 6. And I don't know what that is. So you got to get away from your problem, use your strategies to figure out what 48 divided by 6 is, come up with the answer, then go back to what you're working on. What was I even doing with that number? What was it doing there? And so there's just not enough time. And I can't imagine learning any skill, whether it's learning to play the piano or shooting a basketball or downhill skiing. I can't imagine learning any skill without starting with the fundamentals.
Right. Right. And the times table's clearly part of that.
Yeah. Someone decided that someone got their feelings hurt by doing times tables, and they eradicated that. But I would say this though, and you and I laugh about this, I would say many, 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 many teachers still did the times tables in more of a covert manner, because times tables are still very important. You don't understand the times tables by doing other problems. There's time you have to sit down and grind that out. You can ask any person your age or our age, Evan, what was their original phone number? And they'll know that. What, do you remember your original phone number growing up?
Of course, of course I do. Yep.
Because you learned that at a proper age, and you learned that when your mind was just spongy and was ready to take all that in. Do you remember your phone numbers when you went to university? Probably not.
No, they get blurry. Not. Yeah, they get blurry.
Yeah, but you do know your phone number from your youth. And you also know absolutely what 9 times 8 is. It's just right there. And we've gotten away from that. And so that would be, amongst other things, and again, math, probably a 4-hour conversation on the radio with you, but that whole idea of trying to better understand what you're doing is, I believe in it. Yeah. But we need more time put into the day to do that.
Yeah. Well, Ron Bieberdorf is my guest. Each one of these topics that we ventured into sounds like it could be a whole show segment on itself, because I would love to bring you on, have a talk on something, and then open up phone lines as well. But I do have a couple of other things I wanted to chat about. Classroom complexity. Gosh, we threw that phrase around a lot over the last year, year and a half. What is your definition? Is this an issue? And what is your definition of that?
Yeah, good. Okay, so we'll book a week off to talk about that one. During the teacher strike, or during that time, the word classroom violence came out too, or student violence. That one came out big time. And a lot of the callers on your show would say, well, back in my day, we just suspended that kid that was fighting in the playground. Or back in my day, if that kid acted like that, he'd get suspended or what have you. And that's not who we're talking about with classroom violence. We're talking about kiddos who aren't able to control their behaviors. And they're not necessarily intentionally trying to hurt anybody, but that's how they present. And that's where we're seeing, you know, classmates or staff, that's where we're seeing them getting, whether it's hit or kicked or what have you. And that's troublesome. But it's not that kiddo's fault. That's their particular, that's how they present. Classroom complexity. So you know the saying, democracy is the worst form of government other than all the other forms of government?
Yep.
So taking, like right now with our current funding model and the lack of funding in schools, I don't know that there's other options other than to put the kiddos in grade configurations as they are. There just are not opportunities, aside from if a child is highly irregulated, highly dysfunctional, then yes, they get an educational associate. But there's just not a ton of options otherwise.
So can I just jump in, Ron? I want to ask you a question that many would deem as unpopular, but for the purpose of our conversation, I'm going to ask. Is it doing more harm than good, though, by having what we're calling an inclusive classroom, where it could be a variation of learning levels, it could be a variation of even diagnosed behavior issues in one classroom? Are we doing justice to any of the kids by doing that?
Well, it's certainly a limiting factor. And I would say that in today's classroom, let's just call them a mainstream kid, a child without a learning disability, a child with a full grasp of the language of instruction. Those kiddos, they don't have a lot of access to their teacher anymore, not like they used to have, because the teacher's doing a ton of modifications and, you know, classroom management activities and individualization. They're doing a lot of things other than working directly with the group as a whole. They're working with 29 individual kids rather than a class of 29.
So what has changed, Ron? Like from when I was in school, did these problems exist then? We just dealt with them, or we didn't label them, or what has changed?
I often wonder if we didn't label them. I mean, we all had classmates that seemed to be a little different than us. We all had that. And I don't know that we identified them as whether they were on the spectrum or whether they were ADHD. I don't know. But it does seem to me over the years that there's an increased number of kiddos with special circumstances. And I don't know exactly why that has happened, but we all see a dramatic increase in diagnoses of whether it's ADHD or obsessive defiant or spectrum disorder. We see more and more and more diagnoses, but that doesn't necessarily come with any extra support whatsoever. I'll say another thing. People get excited about population growth and immigration and so on. That population growth, immigration, those folks that move to Saskatchewan to be, whether it's a medical doctor, a journey person or whatever, they have kids. And those kids don't necessarily speak our language. And they don't necessarily, their education systems don't necessarily drive with ours specifically. So we're putting a lot of kiddos into classrooms that change the dynamic of that classroom considerably. And I don't feel that enough consideration financially has been made to the increased immigration and increased population increase.
Mm-hmm. Man, we could do, I feel like I've got 20 more questions on this topic, and I know we're running up against the clock. I've already kept you much longer than I promised you. Go ahead, Ron.
I would say this, that I know many professions, I've been at the hospital lately for surgeries. Those nurses and doctors, they work so hard. I would say that the staff at schools, they still keep rolling. They still go. They're up against a lot of problems, and they just keep trucking. And so that is a light there.
When we're looking for answers, when we're trying to figure out solutions to very complex questions, Are there solutions to be found in funding models in education?
Yes, 100%. And here's an example. So each school division has authority to manipulate the data, or not manipulate, but to put money into different areas of their school division. So, for example, in the one that I just came from, prior to the complexity classroom position that the Saskatchewan Teachers Federation got into the negotiations, our school division was already doing that. They already found or uncovered or reallocated money. So we had a complexity classroom teacher in previous years working on some of those things. Now it's provincially funded. Now I don't know if that's provincially funded. Did they back off money from other portions? I don't know if they did that. Sometimes that provincial funding model is quite an algorithm, and it takes school divisions a week to figure out how, like, okay, you're giving us this money, but where's it coming from, or how is that calculated, and so on. So, yeah, I would say that the funding model definitely would be better, should be looked at. There's also some misnomers around funding. So if a provincial government says, we put this many millions of dollars into schools, yeah, you did, but you put them into building new schools, which absolutely is needed, but you're not necessarily putting increased money into running the school.
So we're talking capital versus operational budgets.
Yes. And right. It's often capital that gets more advertised as far as here's what we're doing for education.
Mm-hmm. Well, you always got to leave them wanting more, and I've got lots more questions, but I think we'll call it a day here, Ron. I've appreciated your time. Thanks for graciously giving us even more than we expected. I can see, as you and I are chatting, I can see an opportunity to put together a bit of a panel discussion and bring in different people from, whether it's school boards, because everybody at the end of the day wants the same thing. We want a great quality education system for our children. We want something that works, and we want it to work within a tax system that isn't, of course, driving us all to a cost of living that we can't sustain. So how do we find that balance? You're one very good and important voice in this, Ron. Thank you so much for your time today.
You know, students or kids are our parents' biggest asset. And so parents want their child to be well taken care of in schools. And we know that parents are setting us the best kids they have in their house. And so we do want to find a way to make things successful for kids in our province 100%.
I've really enjoyed this chat, Ron. Thanks so much.
Okay, take care.
Ron Bieberdorf, former principal, Martinsville Venture Heights Elementary School. I like Ron for lots of reasons. And I've only met Ron recently here in the last couple of years since I've been doing this program. He's a listener to the Evan Bray Show. He joined in behind the scenes into conversations. But I, you know, here's what I like about his perspective. Number one, he clearly cares about the kids. He clearly cares about the kids. But number two, he's not afraid to say, but things aren't perfect. There's some things that we need to fix. And so a voice like that, someone who's just recently, as recent as at the end of June, stepped away from a 3-decade-plus teaching career, brings lots of great perspective to this program. And for that, I'm appreciative. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.